The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, so many serious things to talk about.
Wow.
But I wanted to start the week with something a little lighter.
Great.
And that is that Google Trends, which is this tool that Google has developed and actually was developed by the Google Research and Development team in Israel, has celebrated its 15th birthday. And in honor of the special occasion, it has published the three most searched for words in Israel over the last 15 years. Okay.
Wow.
And this makes for some quite interesting reading because, on the one hand, some of it is quite recent, very affected by recent developments. I don't have to even let you guess what it might be. But some of the words I think will take people by surprise. And so I'm going to launch in without setting a quiz and doing a little test to see what people might think. But I'm going to launch in by saying, obviously, the most sought after word is Corona. That is even over the last 15 years.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yes. Yes. The most sought after word, the most searched for word. The second most searched for word is the word stock. And I don't think it's the chicken stock kind of
no,
stock.
No, that's fascinating.
Which I thought was very fascinating. But the third word might even fascinate you more. The third most searched for word is crossword puzzle.
No.
Which is actually the one word in Hebrew, chidon.
What?
Yes.
That is fascinating. Where did that come from? Anthony, have you ever searched, have you ever Googled the word crossword puzzle?
Personally, I can't say that I'm part of the survey at all.
I also wouldn't.
I don't know if I've even surveyed the word. I don't even know if I've searched for the word corona, to be honest.
True. Yeah, that's very, very interesting.
It just came as like, you know, something which is probably not very relevant, but still just, you know, something to put out there, quite interesting. And of course, the fact is that, you know, this is one of those massively successful tools that Google has developed that's come out of Israel, just one of the few that the Google Israeli branch is extremely proud of. It's had a huge journey and it's been very, very successful in the overall suite of tools that Google has been offering its users over the past, who knows how long, 15 years. It's amazing to think that Google, just this particular tool, has been around for 15 years.
Well, you've just given me an article that I have to write this week is to try and figure out the link between Corona stock and crossword puzzle.
Crossword puzzle. There you go. That's an interesting one. It's one of those tests that, you know, exactly a good one. Just another little story because, as I say, we have got quite a few heavy things to talk about, but there was this fuel tank explosion in the northern part of Lebanon on Saturday, which comes like just a year after that massive explosion that took place, in Beirut itself. This fuel tank explosion killed 28 people, injured at least another 79, according to Lebanon's health ministry. Lebanon is in a real state of affairs. The country is really not in a good shape at the moment. I know that we've had our issues, a few little skirmishes over the border with Hezbollah, in particular in the south of Lebanon. But in general, the country explosion has certainly not helped the cause at all.
Very, very scary. And of course, what we're also keeping a very close eye on is Afghanistan. Does this impact on Israel at all?
So we had a short discussion about Afghanistan and what's going on there last week while you were away. And my view then was that Iran is still very much on the agenda, top of the agenda, as opposed to Afghanistan. Afghanistan does not seem really to have such a direct impact on things in Israel, on things related to Israeli foreign policy, on things relating to Israeli security. Having said that, though, anything that happens within the general sort of Middle East area, you know, Afghanistan, I think we could loosely classify as being part of the Middle East, the wider Middle East. Anything that happens that causes any destabilization has an impact on Israel, has a potential impact on Israel. Of course, US and in particular UK troops having been deployed there in order to calm things down, in order to try and take control of things, all of that does have an impact, an indirect impact on Israel. But I would say, in terms of day-to-day life, things that are going on in Iran, much, much more important, much more relevant than the lack of stability in Afghanistan, but obviously a very, very careful watch being kept on things and events in Kabul as well.
I would maybe hazard a different view, and that would be that it's perhaps less about Afghanistan and more about the fact that that Israel cannot rely on the United States for their own security, given what they've allowed to happen in Afghanistan. So I would say the relevance is more about U.S. foreign policy and how they've bungled this one, rather than it is about the actual country.
I think that's certainly one of the angles, and of course the fact that the U.S. foreign policy and potentially military is now focused more in Afghanistan and therefore potentially less available to do things elsewhere. You know, the focus gets directed in one direction, which means obviously that it's been taken off other areas. So, you know, there's so many different angles that one can take and have a look at this particular situation. Clearly a worrying development for Israel, but I think it's not more than that.
All right, so let's talk about the wildfires that have continued to burn through the night outside Jerusalem.
Yeah, so this is a really crazy story. Still 3,100 people evacuated from their homes in the Jerusalem area. Fires raging in five different points surrounding the capital, mostly on the western side of the city, burning down thousands of dunams of forest, endangering nearby communities. Of course, it's the heat of the summer. We've had very, very hot weather. That hasn't helped the cause. Quite strong winds yesterday, also helping to spread the fire fast on that western side of the capital city. Apparently 12 firefighting aircraft were deployed to help to try to put this fire out. 70 squads from the Jerusalem Fire Department, as well as neighboring departments, helping to try to control these flames. So far, there have been no reports of anybody killed, although there were reports yesterday of people missing. Now, it's not clear whether people have gone missing because they've become somehow taken over by the fire and their whereabouts are unknown, or whether they might have been missing because they escaped and went elsewhere and weren't tracked. So at the moment, no real reports of casualties. One firefighter was reported to have been injured, hurt himself falling over, doing something, but as of now, at least, no casualties having been reported, although the fire was, for example, on the outskirts of a certain psychiatric facility in the Jerusalem Hills, and all the patients had to be evacuated. The emergency room, the Home Front Command's National Operations Emergency Room, was activated in order to try to coordinate the forces. The IDF have been involved, the National Firefighting District Fire, the Jerusalem District Fire Commandment have been involved, the police, and in fact Prime Minister Naftali Bennett even visited the command center yesterday in order just to get some sort of an update on what's going on in the situation. Clearly a very, very serious situation. And what's most unnerving about all of this is apparently it arises from arson. This is something apparently man-made. This is not something natural, some natural phenomenon as a result of the weather and the winds. This is something apparently that has been done by a human hand. It's not clear exactly what that means. In other words, whether there was a particular intention to try to create destruction, whether it's linked in somehow to some of those incendiary balloons that we saw coming over from Gaza towards the end of last week. None of that has been confirmed as yet, other than simply for the fire department to say that this is something which is not a natural phenomenon. This has been done. This has been caused by human hand. And so there will clearly have to be some sort of an investigation afterwards just to see how that happened. So at least for the time being, focuses on saving lives, saving properties, and trying to save some of those forests which are burning down, which have been so carefully cultivated over so many years using money that's come, you know, been donated from Jews abroad and from Israeli government and Israeli Jews and others, Israeli citizens, to try somehow to help make the land green again, to build those forests, to build those trees, to allow them to grow. And unfortunately, so much of those that has been destroyed in this fire, We will have to take stock once it's all over, once, you know, obviously, we've managed to at least save property and save lives, and to try to save as much of the forest as we can possibly.
Terrible. Terrible situation. The Israeli healthcare system has stepped up the program to vaccinate Israelis with a third booster dose of the vaccine. So is there any evidence that this booster dose is effective yet?
Well, I think that we are starting to see a little light. Let's kind of put everything into perspective. As of now, approximately 1 million Israelis have received the third booster dose. I will be one of those. As soon as I finish talking to you guys, I'm on my way to get my third vaccine.
Brilliant. And so
what we're seeing is that at least it's been opened up, at least for now, to slightly older people, people who are considered to be at higher risk. And there is evidence that that population group is not quite as negatively affected over the last few days in terms of the number of new diagnoses of people with corona. So there does seem to be a little bit of optimism about the effectiveness of this third dose. And the Israeli government has really put massive amounts of effort into rolling this out. Over the weekend, Saturday night, pop-up clinics in Dizengoff Square, people queuing up as they're going out after Shabbat to go about their daily business, finding a pop-up clinic in Dizengoff Square and going and getting vaccinated. 24/7 clinics being opened. You can go and get your vaccine at 3 o'clock in the morning if that's what you wish to do. The clinics are open around the clock in order to get people in. Even clinics open over the weekend, over Shabbat, for those people who wish to participate in that, who think it's okay. So a really massive effort to try to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And slowly but surely, the age limit is being reduced in order to get just as many people as possible. And I think that the idea is that this is going to be the way that Rosh Hashanah and the Chagim may well be saved. Because we saw this the last time around when there was this massive rollout of vaccination. We saw it took a week or two or three until it finally came home and we started to feel the effects. But unfortunately, in the meantime, our hospitals are pretty full. More than 500 people at the moment considered to be seriously ill with coronavirus, mostly the Delta variant. Some very, very unnerving statements, issues being taken up in some of the emergency clinics. We are told that most of the people who are seriously ill in hospital are people who were not vaccinated. Okay. And people need to listen to this really, really carefully, because we have real live clinical examples of what goes on between the groups of people who are vaccinated and people who are not vaccinated. Professor Tzvi Friedlander from the Hadassah Medical Center in Jerusalem has said the following: "My anger is directed at the million or so who did not get their vaccines," he said. He often hears from unvaccinated patients about how sorry they were for refusing the jabs. Now, an interesting piece of research was undertaken under the auspices of a visiting professor at the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya, and she found that the two main population groups who are not as vaccinated as everybody else are the Arabs and the ultra-Orthodox. And then she went in to do a survey to find out why those two groups are less vaccinated than all other population groups. And she found a very interesting statistic. She found that most of the people who are not vaccinated in those two groups thought that because they had already had corona, they need not be vaccinated. Now, that's not correct. And certainly the Israeli government is following a policy which says even if you've had corona, you've recovered, you have antibodies as a result of your recovery, those antibodies are not nearly as many as the antibodies that you get from the vaccine. And therefore, even people who have recovered after a certain period of time are required to be vaccinated. And that's a message that clearly hasn't gone out to certain sectors of our community, but is well required in order to keep things under control. So those are the very strong messages
and
that are coming out from what we learned.
It is 8:01. one, I didn't stop you because I think this is such an important message for us here in South Africa. We've got the ability. Let's learn from what Israel is going through. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning.